You've probably seen the funny cartoons of a man's brain and a woman's brain, or the extensive trail that women take through the shopping mall for the same pair of jeans that men buy at the same store by taking just 20 paces. We have to admit it, men and women are definitely wired differently. But when do those differences develop? Are they hardwired from birth, or are they behaviours that are learned? Well, we're off to Napa Valley, California to ask our brain function guru, and we're throwing in a tasty recipe, a fun fitness spot, and some very brainy videos. Stay tuned, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for this special series on brain function. Here's John Medina, developmental molecular biologist, research consultant, and director of the Brain Center for Applied Learning Research at Seattle Pacific University. He launches our discussion on gender differences and the brain.
When exposed to a traumatic event, men handle the emotional experience by firing up the amygdala in their brain's right hemisphere. That's important for two reasons. First, the amygdala is where the brain generates and remembers emotions. The second is the right side of the brain tends to process and remember the gist of an emotional event's meaning. With guys, you have emotions and you have gist. On the other hand, in women, a traumatic event registers her on the left side of the brain, the portion dedicated to details. That's important for three reasons. First, the female amygdala is involved in emotional responses, just like the guys. Second, the left side of the brain processes the details of the emotional responses. Third, their responses to traumatic events is exactly the opposite of what is seen in the guys. If these data mean anything, they create one of the strongest arguments I can think of for the genders to work together, from business to education, since we clearly need both the gist and the details.
So we need each other. I'm not going to argue with that. In 2002, Dr. Arlene Taylor was the recipient of the American Medal of Honor for Brain Function Education from the American Biographical Institute. She still is a leading brain function specialist, and we joined her for today's interview. Dr. Taylor, it's been said that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Are we really so different that it's almost as if we stepped off different planets?
I love that question, because as members of the same species, we are more alike than we are different. I think we need to keep that in focus. But I do a 10-segment workshop on how different males and females are.
Really?
Because when we don't realize that we're different, we expect the other brain to be like us, and when that brain is not, then we have a tendency to think there must be something wrong with that brain because I'm fine. Mm. And that's where we begin to get into relational discord.
So what's different functionally between, where should we start with the differences in functionality of the two?
Well, I suppose we could start in utero when the male brain develops more M cells in the retina, M for motion. Mm-hmm. And usually male fetuses are more motionful during pregnancy, and after they come out the chute, it just continues. And the female brain has some M cells, but more P cells, P for perception, which is aligned more with color perception and texture. And so the female in general is wired to be interested in faces and colors and texture, and the male brain is wired to be interested in anything that moves. So most people know that their brain is about the size of their two fists put together. And that if you pull them apart just a little bit, then you would, like you take a walnut and you crack it out of the shell and you're lucky enough to get it out whole. And you hold it up to the light and you can see there are two halves and there's a connector.
Right.
Well, the human brain has several connectors, three, four bridges. The largest of which, the most studied, is the corpus callosum, or corpus callosum, as some people say it.
Sure.
So McGill University, Montreal, has done a lot of research on the differences between males and female brains. Mm-hmm. And one of the differences has to do with that highway.
Okay.
And in the male brain, there are fewer connectors of smaller diameter. The female brain has more connectors of larger diameter. So what would that mean?
Yes, I was going to say, what do we use those for?
Well, think of it as a highway, literally. Mm-hmm. And when you're born, the brain begins to develop from the back of the brain forward. And so the first part to develop, of course, if we're talking about the three functional layers, is the brain stem and cerebellum, and then the middle layer, and then the cerebrum. And last of all is the prefrontal cortex. This corpus callosum, this highway that connects the two hemispheres, whereby the two hemispheres can chat back and forth,
yes,
tends to have more lanes, if you want to use that metaphor, in the female brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so the female brain is more holistically global,
right,
because you got a five-lane freeway going back and forth.
Right.
The male brain, think of it as at most having a two-lane highway. It's not good or bad, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is now there's not quite as much connection between the two hemispheres. So it's almost like the male brain has, in effect, two independently operating brains. So that the male brain can do two tasks simultaneously,
mm-hmm,
as long as each one is coming out of a different side of the brain. Female brain apparently never does anything simultaneously. It might look like it, but they're not. They're doing rapidly alternating shifts of attention, because if any part of the brain is on, it's all on.
Uh-huh.
Now, the paving takes time. So there's even a difference in the maturation developmental levels of the brain. For example, at birth,
mm-hmm,
the little female's left hemisphere is more developed.
Oh, right.
The little brain in the male, the right hemisphere, is more developed. That puts the little girl at a distinct advantage in most of our preschool, elementary school environments, because they emphasize left brain functions. The little boy is all into right brain functions, and we don't even start teaching them in most schools till late middle or high school.
So what's right brain function? Give us some examples.
Well, for example, mathematics is double frontal. The linear math, arithmetic, algebra, calculus would be a left brain function, whereas the picture maths, trigonometry, geometry, parts of calculus is a right brain function.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all the sciences are in the right frontal lobe. And it's much, the right hemisphere is a much more gestalt, a much more global perspective. So we're expecting these little boys whose right hemisphere is more developed to do all this sequential step-by-step stuff that's aligned with the left hemisphere. Now you've got a set of twins, boy and a girl. They're in the same grade together. She's flourishing because her little left brain is ready to go. He's struggling. People tell him he's a moron. He's failing, he can't do the work, he needs to move more, and they keep telling him to sit down, shut up, and be still.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no wonder more males drop out of school than females. They're already shamed for their giftedness that isn't even rewarded in the school system.
Mm.
So now talk about development, the myelination, the paving, if you will, of these neuron pathways.
Mm-hmm.
The corpus callosum's probably not paved completely till age 20 or 21. And the prefrontal cortex not till late 20s.
Right.
And the male brain is going to take another 1.6 years because, in effect, they get a set of binoculars behind their eyes that the female brain will never get.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, the inner ear of the male brain is different from the inner ear of the female brain. So now we're getting some structural, anatomical, and therefore functional differences.
My, it's so fascinating and so complex, and we have no idea when we hold our babies what's really happening. So for all you 20-somethings, although you think you have it all together, just remember your brain is not fully there yet. Well, there's a whole lot more to cover on the difference between boys and girls. Go Healthy for Good is just warming up. Coming ahead, we have a wonderful pot pie, the news, great physical fitness, and much more. Right after a short break. Stand by.
There is a garden in every childhood, an enchanted place where colours are brighter, the air softer, and the morning more fragrant than ever.
Of all life's seasons, childhood is the most beautiful.
Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see.
Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him Father.
A child can ask 1,000 questions that the wisest man cannot answer.
When I approach a child, I have two thoughts: affection for what he is today and respect for what he can become.
There are no 7 wonders of the world in the eyes of a child. There are 7 million.
Children are 1/3 of our population and all of our future.
He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me."
Welcome back. Justin, what have you got for us today?
Well, today we're going to make a vegetable pot pie.
Yeah, that is
exactly right.
I love veggie pot pie. Winter, it's just the best thing in winter.
Comfort food,
yeah,
huh?
Comfort food, yeah.
So the basic steps to this recipe are we're going to deal with our veggies, we're going to deal with our sauce, we're going to put the sauce on the thing, and then we're going to put some crust on it. So that's the quick summary.
That's the very quick summary.
Now let me tell you what's in this thing.
Because it looks real busy around here.
Yeah. So here's what's in this thing. It's 2 cups of chopped onions, 3 tablespoons of water, 2 tablespoons of oil, 6 cups of boiled potatoes, 2 cups of steamed carrots, 1 cup of frozen green peas, 1 large can of drained garbanzo beans, 4 cups of soy milk, 4 tablespoons of whole wheat flour or cornstarch, mm-hmm. either one, 2 tablespoons of onion powder, 2 teaspoons of sea salt, 1/2 cup of yeast flakes, 6 tablespoons of chicken-style seasoning, and 1 recipe of pie crust.
Oh.
So, plenty of ingredients this time around.
That's a pretty long list.
Yeah, we better get to it, huh?
Yeah, we had.
So, the veggie side of things, you're just going to cube your potatoes and boil them till they're tender. You're going to slice your carrots and steam them. You're going to...
And fry your onions,
You're going to saute your onions. And then you're going to just put your peas and your garbanzo beans in there.
Excellent.
That's the veggies.
All right.
Through the magic of television, it's already done.
Ah.
Yes. Now, this is the part we're going to deal with on the program today. We're going to make the gravy,
Okay, because pastry's already done, hey?
The pastry's already done.
All right.
So we've got some...
Let me hold that for you because we're a bit crowded.
We've got some soy milk here. We'll pour that in there. And then this is some chicken-style seasoning we're going to add in. That's right.
There is the secret ingredient.
That's right. We got some nutritional yeast flakes, as we've talked about before. B vitamins.
B vitamins.
I'm learning.
There you go. You're doing well.
There you go. And this is a little bit of whole wheat flour we're going to put in there. And I guess this is our
onion powder.
A little bit of that.
Of course, we always have to have onion. We add onion powder to our gravy and onions to our vegetables. What would we do without
onions? We just need some raw onions on top.
No. Do you know, I even thought of doing that today just for you.
There's some salt. And we're just going to stir this up. Now, we've got this on a medium-high heat. And the idea is you just want to thoroughly incorporate this.
You're probably going to want to stir that constantly with all
exactly.
the thickeners and things in there.
Exactly. So you're just going to cook this until it thickens, is the basic idea. And we're getting a little lumpy, so I think
okay.
I'm
going to
give
me
this
hold
a try.
That for you.
This handy guy.
We're going to make a mess.
It might splash me here.
Oh, it might
maybe
do.
Maybe just a little guard here.
Let's use this.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay, let's call that good. We still got a couple lumps, but hey, this is TV.
All right.
So
we'll put that on our pastry again, hey?
Yeah. So you just stir this medium-high heat until it thickens up. And then you take this, and through the magic of television, it has thickened.
Do you want to roll the pastry, and I'll look after that?
Okay.
Or vice versa.
Sure, we'll switch. So this is some delicious pastry dough. And we're just going to roll it out. This is going to go on top of our dish. I'm so tempted to just grab a piece of this pastry dough and put it in my mouth right now.
Oh, no, you can't.
That's what you say. That's what you say, Demerita. See, now If I roll it out into a large enough thing where it hangs off the sides, we're going to have to cut the sides off.
You are going to have
and
to
then
cut the
I'll have yeah. to have
He's
to
really
dispose it. Of the trimmings.
But it's not good for you. All that raw wheat flour. No, never did a man any good.
Oh, okay. And we want to go healthy around here.
Aye, we do.
Okay.
That we do. Oh, that looks good.
Yeah, what do you think? Shall we pour the sauce onto our veggies?
Yeah, you go for it. Oh, you want me to pour from here? Okay.
Well,
here we go.
Mmm. That looks rich and delicious.
Mm-mm-mm. Very good.
That looks fantastic. Okay.
Now, do you want to stir that in? Just in case.
Now, if you'll help me here, grab the... Oh!
Whoa! We nearly lost that. Alrighty.
That would be a shame because I'm planning to lick that pan later.
You're planning for me to put this on there, I suppose.
Well, I'm planning to help you.
Oh!
How's that?
Okay.
Well, it looks like you're the expert, so maybe... Hey,
there we go.
Done. And unfortunately, we've got some overhang.
We have.
So we're
so
just going to have to...
cut that
I can
off.
Just nibble around the edges. Is that all right? Sounds fine to me.
Well, that looks beautiful. Mm. I think we're running out of time here.
Yeah. Time to taste.
Yep, there we go. So you're going to want to press that down and then always make holes so that the steam can vent. And let's cut a piece of pie. Woohoo!
I always let you do that part.
Yes, you do.
You are the expert at...
The professional cutter?
The professional cutter. Oh,
look
at
that.
That looks wonderful, doesn't
Ooh.
It?
Very nice. All right, let's just cut a little piece off this.
A little sliver.
Sliver. Armed.
Now, I happen to know that the folks in the control room are hoping that I bring this casserole back to them.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
All right.
Cheers.
Ding. Fantastic. Mm.
Is a tomato a vegetable or a fruit? Well, when it comes to preventing ovarian cancer, tomatoes might be the queen of fruit. Women who eat tomatoes more than 5 times per week have a significantly lower risk of ovarian cancer than women who occasionally or never eat them. Women who regularly consumed fruit also had a lower risk, according to the Adventist Health Study. Salsa, anyone? Eating tomatoes at least 5 times a week is another ageless advantage.
Here's an analysis on gender differences by John Stossel on Fox.
We treated them the same, but they were just so different. I don't just mean my kids, you'd see it in their friends too. The girls were, well, more civilized. They'd look you in the eye, talk to you. They cared about your feelings. The boys... Well, the boys wanted to go to war. The girls cared more about playing with each other, talking, cooperating.
You'll be the princess.
There were plenty of exceptions, of course, but the pattern was clear. No matter how sex-neutral we parents tried to be, it just seemed obvious to me that boys and girls' instincts are somehow different. And the author of The Power of the Female Brain agrees with that. That's neuroscientist Dr. Daniel Amen. And Dr. Amen, you conducted the biggest brain study ever done, 46,000 brain scans, and found what?
Female brains were dramatically more active in about 85% of the brain. Women are really wired for leadership. And if you look at the homes and you look at organizations like churches, they're often the leaders. They're clearly the health leaders. And if it wasn't for this thing called children that derails their careers, that they really make great CEOs. Women in our studies, and also I point this out in the book, they're better with things like empathy, intuition, collaboration, self-control. In fact, women go to jail 14 times less than males. And what many people wouldn't think of as a strength that I think is totally a strength is they have appropriate worry. The don't worry, be happy people, more often men on motorcycles, die the earliest from accidents or preventable illnesses.
So an element of worry aids survival. Have you noticed that little boys speak in rumbles, grunts, and noises, and little girls, well, they just talk and talk and talk. What's that all about anyway? Let's see what the opinion of Dr. Taylor's brain is on this.
Dr. Taylor, we're just talking about the difference in the brain of a little boy versus a little girl. And now there's socialization differences. Our parents treat us differently based on our gender. Does that come into play at all?
Our parents do treat us differently based on gender. Teachers in schools treat people differently based on gender. There's so many studies out there. Teachers tend to call on little boys more and help them more with their work and answer more of their questions than they do with little girls. Where did that come from? And we start very early with socializing little boys to pretend they have no emotion except anger. Anger's acceptable. But tender emotion, tears, oh my. You see this on the playground all the time. A little boy and a little girl fall down, skin their knees. Everybody rushes to the little girl, picks her up, comforts her. It's okay, honey. Go ahead and cry. It'll make you feel better. You know, let's put something on that boo-boo. And the little boy over there is feeling just as deeply. Yes. And people look at him and say, come on, suck it up. You're a man. You know, it doesn't hurt that bad. You'll get over it. And so they learn to turn down the tenderness that's built into the brain. And that's horrible socialization, in my opinion.
So it would be much fairer, much better for that child to minister to them in an identical way.
In an identical way, if you could really bring yourself to do that. Mm. You don't fawn all over her and you don't brush him off. Mm. You try to give them the same type of encouragement and nurturing and affection and care.
How much does role modeling come into that, the male-female differences?
Well, role modeling can impact speech patterns in a great degree. You know, most little girls grow up speaking female, and female speech is very different from male speech. And most little boys grow up speaking male, which is very different. Male speech is a language of authority and direction. And female speech is a language of connection and conciliation and relationships. Not good or bad, but they're different. Mm-hmm. And so let's say that you have a little boy. He's the fifth child with four older sisters living with mother, grandmother, and aunt, no father in the home. And it's highly likely that he will develop more learned components of female speech than he would otherwise. That's not good or bad. But if he learns female speech as his primary language and goes out into the real world and starts talking female, the males and the women looking at him are going to think there's something wrong with this person. That's the wrong language coming out of that mouth. The way I relate to that is years and years ago, I met a Chinese woman who had been raised in Australia. And when she started speaking, I heard that wonderful Australian accent that I have tried to learn for lo these many centuries. But there was a total disconnect in my brain because I did not expect that sound to come out of that face. And it was a really interesting experience for me. And so I think that's what happens with males and females when they learn the opposite gender language as their primary language. So could that happen to a girl? Yes. She could be an only child raised by her father, for example. Or a couple of brothers and the mother has died and the father doesn't remarry. And so she could grow up learning male and speak male. Now that could be some advantage to her in the workplace, but other females are going to be uncomfortable with that.
Fascinating.
But the goal is to learn both of them, you know. If you're female, learn male speech, and if you're male, learn female speech, because it's just like sensory preference. I need to speak to somebody in their language to be quickly effective. So what does that mean?
Yes, I was going to say, how do we do that?
Well, it means, for example, that women tell each other the whole story. They start at A when Hector was a pup and want to go clear through to Z.
Right.
Or Z, if you're from Canada.
Or New Zealand.
Males want the bottom line. Just give me the bottom line.
So just get to Z and...
They just want to have the bottom line, and they'll ask questions if they need more information. Women don't trust they will. But by the time women have told the whole story, he's probably tuned out. Mm-hmm. And now she comes to the bottom line and he misses it.
Well, we're going to come back to that. And that's the bottom line for this segment. After the break, be ready for your fitness spot, just after the news. In the headlines today, do depressed moms pass it on? Psychosocial stress limits lifespan, and one in five kids may have a psychiatric disorder. Depression during pregnancy increases the risk for children to exhibit depression at age 18. In a large long-term study from London, prenatal depressive symptoms in the mother were found to increase the risk for depression in adult offspring. The more severe the prenatal depression score, the greater the risk of the offspring being affected. And there was also a trend towards increased risk in the offspring when mothers had postnatal depression, a finding supported by previous studies. Experiencing major life stressors conveys an increased risk of death and disease in older adults. Researchers from Amsterdam have found significant increases in all-cause mortality, cardiovascular deaths, and cancer deaths when there were three or more major life stressors. For 15 years, they followed over 2,000 older adults whose mean age was 62 at the start of the study.
Those with three or more stressors had a 50% increase in all-cause mortality. Those with four or more had a 60% increase. Major life stressors included things like problems with or the death of a child or a partner, financial issues, death of a friend, and moving house. A government survey compiled by the CDC indicates that as many as 20% of US children and teens may suffer from a recognized mental disorder. Conditions included in the data collection were ADHD, behavioral and conduct disorders, autism spectrum disorders, depression and anxiety, alcohol and illicit drug use, and cigarette dependence. For affected young people, good parenting is essential and challenging. But always remember, since one in five are affected, you are definitely not alone. So look for help. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. Takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Have you got your partner? Because I've got mine.
I'm trying to run.
What are we doing today?
All right, we got a couple. So we got two exercises where we're going to use a resistant band.
Okay.
So we're going to do an exercise we used before as a warm-up, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're going to squat down. We're going to work. I'm going to work my delt.
All right.
And you're going to come up. All right. So let's do about five more reps. Five. Four, three, two, and one. All right, again, warming up the delts a little bit, okay?
And
your quads.
Yep. Yeah.
So what I want you to do is hold this handle here. We're gonna do a stationary lunge. You're gonna do a stationary lunge, all right? And I'm gonna work my tricep, all right?
All right.
So you do the lunge, and as you come up, I'm gonna do a kickback.
Now, do I have my arms straight?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can keep just like that. All right. So go ahead. You do lunge, and come back up, and I kick it back. All right. So partner one, working the legs. Partner two is working the tricep. Okay. Again, thinking about going down, using that quad, and as she comes up, I'm squeezing my tricep. Okay.
Right.
Kick it back. All right. Now you can mix it up, and where both of you are going down for the stationary lunge, and you pull that in. And I go out, all right? Just to make things a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
There it is. Let's switch sides. And actually, we'll switch sides and we'll switch exercise. So go ahead. You do your lunge.
Oh, you are.
You
do
your lunge. There you go. All right, so we're gonna go down and I'm gonna pull. Again, working the biceps and my leg. You're working your triceps a little bit. So what I want you to do is kick that arm back, almost like you're doing a kickback.
All right.
Do that, go ahead. There you go. Perfect. Again, you can do about 10 to 15 reps, okay? The third exercise, something a little fun. I'm gonna put this down. You know when I put that down, it means something, all right?
It means trouble for me.
So I'm gonna go in this position here.
All right.
Dr. Narada is gonna crawl underneath, all right?
I am?
Yes, go ahead.
All right, see you later.
Go ahead. Crawl underneath. Crawl,
all
crawl,
forward.
Crawl. Yep, all the way. And then I'm gonna come down, okay? And you, what you're gonna do is use my back. Stand up.
Uh-huh.
And jump over me, okay?
No.
Yes, come on, come on. Put your hands on my back.
Right.
And jump over.
No. Oh,
come on, you can do it. Come on, try.
He's living very dangerously.
Come on, come
right
on,
there.
Go ahead. There you go. And then back up. Go ahead. You can do it. So now what you can do is put a timer on and see how much you can do in that minute. One more. Come on, you can do it. There you go. And back up. There you go. Again, great cardiovascular exercise. Got you a little bit out of breath, right? But that's working the core. Part of one's working the core. You are working a little more cardiovascular, working a little bit more plyometric, that jump.
Yep.
All right?
Yep.
And an exercise that I really, really love, all right?
That was very funny. I hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. I think I got the easy job for
no,
a change.
No. I got the hard job. I did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
What do you say, telling porgies? All right, so we're going to do a squat jump, right?
Okay.
When we come up, we're going to high five.
All right.
All right, so go down. Up. One. Give me a high five. Two. Three. Four. Give me five more. Five. Four. Three. Two. And one. All right. So you got two low impact exercises, one for plyometrics, and the other one is a plyometric as well. So two low impact, two. Kind of get the heart rate going a little bit.
Yeah, that's a new word for me, plyometrics.
Plyometrics means jump.
All right.
Plyometrics. It's good for runners, anyone who wants to build power in their legs. Good way to mix up your, you know, your typical regular exercise workout. Instead of doing a regular squat, add a little jump. Try it. And you're pushing off of your big toe, coming down. And just with your partner,
it does. When you say the big toe, but...
Yeah, you push that. Because you don't want to have your toes balled up in your sneaker, okay?
Right.
So make sure you open up your toes and push off you. I'm out of breath, too. All right? But that's
now that's a change. Sean, out of breath.
I was pretending. I was. No. But if you're typically used to doing squats and you're using a lot of weight, just a great way to break that plateau is throw in some plyometrics. Especially with your push-up, let's just say if you were so used to doing your push-up, you can go down on your knee, do a regular push-up, push up a little bit, just to kind of break that plateau.
Yep.
Again, just confusing the body, challenging the muscles.
Right.
Kind of fun.
It probably changes your epigenome. In fact, we know it does.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. See how we could bring all everything together? I love it, right?
Great.
All right, so what we're going to do is cool down a little bit, chest up, bring that knee up. And switch sides. One more time. And switch sides. All right, open and close. Right hand on the top, left hand on the top. So you like plyometrics now?
I do. Yeah. They do get you out of breath, though.
I got some of this stuff.
Which makes you feel like you've actually done something.
You do. You get that burn. You got a nice, good feeling.
It's nice.
Trying to lower your cholesterol? Ordering a different sandwich for lunch might help. A 2009 UK study compared the effectiveness of two whole grains, wheat and rye, on lowering cholesterol levels. The study found that rye was more effective in lowering blood cholesterol levels. So when you are at the lunch counter next, ask for a lettuce and tomato sandwich on rye. This small change could make a big difference. Choosing whole grain rye bread is another ageless advantage.
Now it's question time. Someone called and asked, my gallbladder was removed in 2006 and since then I've developed gastritis. I've started juicing, but is there anything that you'd recommend for the bile irritation of the stomach? I'm not sure that I understand the mechanism for your gastritis because bile doesn't flow backwards to the stomach, but typically would flow down through the small and the large intestine. And because it enters the intestinal tract after the stomach. And normally high-fat foods exit the stomach and that stimulates the gallbladder to squeeze out the bile because bile disperses fats, enabling them to be broken down and absorbed. But after your gallbladder is removed, the bile will just drip continuously into the gut 24/7 rather than being held in that little gall bag or gallbladder until it's needed. So that continual release of bile can actually cause softer stools or even diarrhea. Now, for the gastritis, you might want to try some slippery elm bark, some aloe vera, and if necessary, an antacid for a short time, or some DGL licorice. Mary called and she wrote, I thought tofu was a processed food and it's not good to eat it frequently, just every now and then. Well, Mary, tofu is soy that's been processed, so you're absolutely right, it is a processed food. And so I don't recommend eating it every day, but there's probably nothing I recommend eating every day. Eating in moderation is okay, and there are a lot worse foods to eat. Soy is so nutritious and beneficial. But a variety is good. So have a variety of legumes and tofu interspersed with one another, and you won't come to any harm. Thanks for calling those questions. Keep them coming. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And to text, the number's 301-960-5144. And remember, you can post them on the Go Healthy for Good Facebook page. Modern beetroots are derived from wild sea beets that originated around the coasts of Europe, Middle East and Africa. They're available all year round, so it's easy to find them fresh. Choose fresh, bright, firm textured roots. The top greens should be used while they're fresh. Chop them finely and steam them on their own or with your favourite greens. The root can be kept in the fridge for weeks. They're a wonderful source of iron and nitrate. They boost the immune system and guard against cancer. Beets can be grated and eaten raw, or you can boil, steam, roast, or sauté them. Raw, they're great for juicing, and recent research shows that the juice can bring down high blood pressure. Bon appetit. So if men just want the bottom line and we ladies give them the entire essay, perhaps they just don't listen to us.
Dr. Taylor, we're talking about male-female differences. You know, as a woman, I really would be fascinated to know, how do men listen? Do they listen?
Again, that's one of the age-old questions. Well, there's some interesting PET scan study data out about how males and females listen. And I probably ought to preface that with, you remember high school, the bell curve of distribution, and when you do research, you come out with generalizations that apply to two-thirds of the population clearly.
Yes.
And then some not so much. So there's always going to be males and females that you might know that don't really epitomize the research. But right. I think you need to know the research because most of the time it's going to apply. All right, so back to my face is a clock. 12, 6, 9, 3, two lines, four chunks. All right, in these two posterior chunks, in the temporal lobes, is the part of the brain where we decode speech and decode sounds. The left temporal lobe is believed to have about an 85% advantage for decoding speech sounds. Still can do some non-speech sounds, the whistle of a train, the bark of a dog. But the right temporal lobe is absolutely opposite. Its advantage is for non-speech sounds, voice inflections, and it can do some speech. So you put a female brain in a PET scan camera and you ask her to listen carefully to different types of voices. Male voices, female voices, old voices, middle-aged voices, young voices, babies crying. Both temporal lobes light up. So with the left, she's decoding the speech sounds, and with the right, she's picking up all of those nuances of tonality. So it doesn't matter for a female, and usually they've got better hearing from birth on anyway, so they can even be listening to people speaking quietly and get it. Now, you put the male brain in a PET scan camera, and first you ask him to listen to a male brain, male speaking. Left hemisphere lights up. Right hemisphere is completely dark. He is decoding the speech. He is not picking up the tonality nuances. You ask him now to listen to a female voice, and the opposite happens. Wernicke's area is just black as night. And what does light up is the right temporal lobe where you decode a melody line of music. So you've got a man and a woman eating breakfast, and he's reading the paper, and she's chattering on, and if he likes the sound of her voice, he's good to go because that's distraction in the environment, and males focus better with some distraction, so he's really enjoying his paper. And the only problem comes when she says, "Are you listening?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm listening." He is. And then she says, "What did I just say?" And he goes, "Oops. I wasn't decoding any language. Let's see, what's the last thing I heard her say?" And if it's something she said 3 weeks ago, there's going to be a problem. Or there could be a problem.
So the message is we should keep chattering as women?
I don't have a message except to say chatter as women to other women. Mm-hmm. And if you really want your male in the family to listen, then number one, you got to speak up. Lower your voice. Don't give any of this little high-pitched stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why I always use a microphone if I'm speaking to a mixed group of people. Mm-hmm. Give him the bottom line. What is it that you really want him to pay attention to? Because it's going to take him more energy to decode your voice anyway. Mm. Lady said to me once, "I don't believe that. He never listens to me. I chatter on and he never listens to me. Maybe I'll try it." So she called me a couple days later and she said, "Oh, this was too fun."
Really?
She said, "I was chattering on and all of a sudden I took a deep breath and said, 'Harry, I just bought tickets for a 3-month cruise on the QE2. She said, "He heard me, dropped his paper and spilled his coffee." So you might want not to be that dramatic. But what you really want them to hear, you need to do specifically in a good, solid voice, just the bottom line, "Thank you very much."
Mm. Now, what about for men speaking to their wives? Any tips for them?
Well, she can hear anything because both of her hemispheres light up. He might want to be careful about not speaking too loud or it'll sound like he's shouting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just don't speak as many words as we do usually. So if he does want to say something to you, it's probably something he thinks is important and you might want to listen.
Mm. So turn your ears on and your mouth off.
Yeah, your ears are going to be on anyway.
Oh, I see.
But just, you know, bite your tongue while he gives you his little piece.
Hmm. Interesting. So we need to practice that, don't we?
I think
very
so.
Very much so.
Because it's different languages.
Right, and improves communication. Ah, ladies, turn on the ears and turn off the voice. We'll be back with more in a moment.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Couple do to overcome infidelity, especially when someone is having difficulty trusting again?
Affairs usually happen when one of the spouses feels that his emotional needs are not being met. Men and women are different. Women need affection. Men need sex. The quicker they realize what the needs are and meet those emotional needs, the easier it's going to be to negotiate marriage.
Definitely. And since infidelity causes a compromise of trust in the relationship, it's important for the person who has caused the offense to be accountable and to behave in a way that shows that they're remorseful and that they don't want to ever get into these behaviors again. So seek help from a professional counselor and ask God to help you rebuild the trust in your relationship.
And we're back. Remember to call us with your health question at 855-400-HEALTHY. Here's Dr. Daniel Amen talking to John Stossel again about how men's and women's brains are fundamentally different.
The memory centers of the brain, it's called the hippocampus, deep in the brain, significantly more active in women than in men, which is why she remembers your first kiss and every time your mother was rude to her. When women get an emotional memory, they have trouble letting it go and often remember things you wish they would have forgotten.
I remember my first kiss. It just reminds me of what happened to Lawrence Summers, who was president of Harvard, where he dared say, maybe, just maybe, a reason that women don't dominate the way men do in the sciences might be biological. And he got drummed out of Harvard just for saying that.
Well, he did, but I think it was the wrong message, that they weren't perhaps as good or as competent. Their brains in that particular area of the brain are just as strong, but they're more biased to relationship issues. And so they're more likely to go into professions where they want to interact with people.
If you're wired to be relational, makes sense. Find a people-centered job. We can laugh about it here, but trying to communicate with the opposite gender can be challenging.
Male speech and female speech. Can we really miss each other?
It's two different languages. It's absolutely two different languages. Male speech is very directive and very authoritatively brief. Female speech suggests that we might want to do something. The problem is that when you're talking with another female, there's no conflict. But if you're talking male-female, it's different. I'll give you two examples.
Please.
Male and female are on a trip driving. He's driving. They're driving down the highway. And she looks at him and she says, Harry, are you thirsty? All right. That's female speech for, I want to start a conversation about maybe stopping to get something to drink. Mm-hmm. Two females would get it. The other female would say, no, I don't think I'm thirsty, but are you? Would you like to stop? And now they negotiate how this is going to happen. She says, Harry, are you thirsty? And Harry answers the question because that's male speech. And he goes, no. So now she's steaming. Now, if two males were driving, they wouldn't say anything, neither one of them. If the driver was thirsty, he would just pull off the next exit, stop at a 7-Eleven, get out, go in, never say a word. And it's just room for a lot of conflict. So women need to speak female with females and males with male with males. So if I'm driving with a male and I'm thirsty, I don't ask him a question. I say, I'm thirsty, please pull off at the next exit. Okay, he knows exactly what I'd like him to do. Now here's what happens with parents and children. Mother looks into her little boy's room and it doesn't look the way she wants it to look. So the next time he cruises through the kitchen, she puts her arm around him. She puts on her little Mona Lisa grin. She says, it would be nice if you cleaned your room before you went out to play. That's female speech. It's optional. He has a choice. It would be nice. He thinks, oh, she was smiling. When she cleans my room, she washes and irons the curtains and vacuums the carpet and changes the sheets, and she's happy I'm out to play. His father comes in. She notices nothing's changed in the boy's room. She goes to the father and she says, your son went out to play without cleaning his room. Do something. So male speech to male, he says, pick everything up off the floor in your room before you leave the house. No smile, no patting of the shoulder, very specific, very direct. Little Farquhart goes over there and picks everything up on the floor. Then he goes out to play. Wasn't optional.
And it wasn't a problem.
It wasn't a problem. Now mother checks his room, it's cleaned up, she goes ballistic for the second time. How come I don't get any respect? He did it for you, he didn't do it for me. Well, she didn't speak his language. If she had said, pick everything up off the floor before you leave the house, most likely he'd have done it. Mm-hmm. He probably would have been totally shocked to understand it in his own language, although he might not have understood that's what was really happening.
What about the other way, when father speaks to daughter?
Well, little girls can feel like they did something wrong and burst into tears. You know, here's a little girl and a little boy, and they're playing in the family room, and father comes in and he says in a big, loud voice, not meaning to be angry or stern, he just says, 5 minutes, pick everything up, we're leaving. Okay, the little boy gets it. The little girl bursts into tears because the tone of his voice said that she must have done something wrong, and she doesn't know what it is. Whereas if the mother had come in and said, you know, it'd be nice if you start picking things up, we want to go to dinner, she'd have gotten it, the little boy would have kept playing. So you have to talk to two people like they've got different languages. You know, honey, we're going to go eat out in just a few minutes. Start getting all your stuff together. John, pick everything up off the floor and put it away.
And we solve both problems.
And we solve both problems. Hmm. But you have to be bilingual to do that.
Right. You know, when we were created, it says that male and female, we were created in God's image. Tell us a little bit about that in terms of the brain.
Well, I wasn't there, for starters. So I can only tell you what I read.
Yes.
But what I read is that human beings are a species just like any other species, male and female in the species. And if your belief system is that the species in some way reflect the character and personality of the deity, then you have to understand that male and female dogs are different, male and female horses are different, male and female chimps are different, male and female man, humans, are different. And that together they give you some kind of picture, perhaps, of the character and personality of God, though it'll be somewhat dim. Mm. But I find people who think that males represent the deity. A few females think that females represent the deity. No, I think each one of us has half a brain in that context.
And
together we mirror that.
We mirror the brain, the personal and character of God. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been a blessing.
Men and women, boys and girls, we are wired differently. Fortunately, opposites attract. Otherwise, there might be gender wars. Instead, we complement each other. By working together, we can achieve more than we can otherwise. While women may often be the CEO of the home, men lead by being authoritative and directive. It's beautiful to see how God has created the two in His image. Incomplete on our own, complete in union. Even God is in community. Three makes one, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So man and woman constitute a composite image of God. What an honor. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. In our final program in this series, Dr. Ben Carson will explain his personal insights about the human mind. We'll see you next time.